Welcome to Sound Practice, the business podcast for physicians and healthcare leaders, hosted by Mike Tsakopoulos and produced by the American Association for Physician Leadership.
Although physicians and musicians alike may find their way to leadership through performance excellence, that is where their similarities diverge. Defined pathways exist for education and training to lead in the musical arts. Yet, physicians are often left to their own trial-and-error approach to professional development. That quote is from the foreword of my guest's new book, Career Prescription Guide, A Physician's Guide for Career Transformation or Advancement. We will hear from a true physician leader next on Sound Practice. My guest today is Pamela Sullivan. Dr. Sullivan is a physician leader, mentor, and AAPL faculty member. She's also the author of the recently published Career Prescription Guide, A Physician's Guide for Career Transformation or Advancement. The book is a practical guide for physicians at any point in their careers and is the result of Dr. Sullivan's many years' experience in working with physician clients. The link to information on the book is in our show notes. Pamela Sullivan, welcome to Sound Practice.
Thank you for having me today.
Well, it's our absolute pleasure. As you know, this is the podcast of the American Association for Physician Leadership. So could you describe your path to becoming a physician leader?
Yes, thank you. It's a bit of a unicorn path, as people have advised me. I started my career as a physical therapist and then recognized that I wanted to go into medicine. So my plan was all along, I would definitely be an orthopedic surgeon. I had no doubt about that. And then I recognized I don't know medicine. And if I really want to be able to take care of patients, I needed to learn medicine better. So I went and did a residency in internal medicine. And I took a one-year position in the emergency room while completing my applications for orthopedic surgery residencies. And in that 1 year, I fell in love with emergency medicine. In those days, and I don't want to date myself too much, but in those days, people kind of use the emergency room as a transitional point in their career. And emergency medicine residencies were just starting to take place. So I had that opportunity to do this for 1 year, and I ended up staying for over 20 years in a trauma center and really enjoyed what I did, and it really matched my personality well. From there, I jumped into urgent care work because I wasn't emergency medicine trained. So that was an issue in that day and age. So I got very involved with the urgent care space. I became the first female and only female president of the Urgent Care Association of America. And then I transitioned into the private equity space. So I received my MBA when I was 50 years old, recognizing that the direction I wanted to go in my career required me to have that MBA. And throughout my career, what I didn't discuss was being a female in medicine, which definitely limited your options in leadership in that day and age as well. And also, I was the sole financial supporter for our family. My husband is an amazing man. He was a stay-at-home dad. He built our house. He did so much for the family. But I was the one that provided the paycheck. So making career changes became more difficult as we decided how we wanted to raise our kids and what we were doing and so forth and so on. So for us, we had to make decisions based on those two factors. And it became very hard to do leadership as I was advancing my career, but I recognized more and more that was what I wanted to do. However, those doors would be closed as a female in medicine. So it wasn't until I received my MBA and had a mentor by the name of Dr. Greg Daniel that really encouraged me and gave me that opportunity and opened the door to leadership. So I next joined a company called Landmark Health. They were early in their company growth. They were about 2 years in when I joined them. And there I had a travel position where I helped implement new markets, but that position grew in every year, or grew, I should say, and every year I took on new responsibilities from being a chief clinical officer over a central division and eventually having a national position where I oversaw all of our onboarding, implementation, and a travel team that helped support all markets in many different ways. So that was that point in my career, and we sold to Optum. And although Optum is a wonderful company, it did not meet my needs for my professional growth and my career path. So that's when I started doing some consulting work in the value-based care space, a lot of work with startup companies, did some work outside of those areas as well. And then I was asked to join P3 Health Partners a few months ago, and that's where I'm at right now. So,
excellent. Well, tell me about P3 Health Partners.
Yeah, P3 Health Partners is a great company, also private equity based and publicly traded. So that was a new world for me to be in, both publicly traded and private equity at the same time. And in this company, we support primary care physicians being able to be very successful in that value-based care world by providing them with different tools to meet their goals, as well as support systems. And then we also have a second arm, which is our senior wellness centers. And in that area, I am working with a lot of our high-risk patients. And we know it's best for a patient to be able to stay out of the hospital as much as possible, avoid the deconditioning, nosocomial infections, unnecessary procedures, et cetera, et cetera. So it can often be a downward spiral if a chronically ill patient hits the emergency room. So my goal is to try to manage as much as we can with these patients, preventing them from getting to the point of needing hospitalizations by meeting their personal healthcare goals. But in addition, what can we do to manage these patients in place at home? And if we need to use the hospital services, we use them. But my goal, again, is to keep patients as healthy, meeting their personal goals by staying at home.
Very nice. P3 Health Partners website states that the organization is effective in, quote, fostering patients that are informed, conscientious, manage their long-term health, and are less likely to utilize high-cost services. How's that possible?
Yes, that goes back to that value-based care space. If you do the right things for the patient, and I've always put the patient as my North Star, if you do the right things for the patient, you don't have to worry as much about the financial because the right things happen. So we have, our patients have primary care physicians. We do not want to take the place of the primary care physician. We want to augment and supplement what they do. So when we see a patient, when P3 Health Partners, nurse practitioners or physicians see a patient, we can spend a lot more time with that patient. We can dive into what their personal goals are. We can make sure that they understand advanced care directives and the decisions that they make. And I'm a firm believer, especially after working in the emergency room for so long, anyone 18 years and older needs to have advanced care directives completed for so many reasons. So one of our goals is to make sure that they understand those decisions, that they're comfortable when the time comes to be closer to end of life, that their family understands the patient's wishes, and that we all adhere to them, that we give them the options that they want, whether that's do everything possible or whether that's passing comfortably at home. But we want to make sure, again, that they understand what their options are, and that they also understand the disease processes that they have so that they can reach out much earlier when they start to decompensate, let's say, with congestive heart failure. We've also just launched a 24/7 365 access center. We know a lot of patients, especially in rural areas, do not have access to care. Single physicians cannot be on call awake 24/7 managing their patients during the day and at night. So we take that burden off of the primary care, and we can manage these patients again 24/7, giving them access to care. And it's not just the high-risk patients, it's giving all patients access to care and not using the emergency room for an urgent care or primary care service.
Is this playing a long-term game when insureds are switching jobs and thus switching carriers? Do we have an issue where it's a great plan, but it only works if patients are with you long-term?
We do find that the great question, by the way, we do find that patients that are with us long-term end up doing better in the program, because we look at what those levers are that drive hospitalization for an individual patient, and we start to address them. And the longer that you're with us, the further down the list we can go on addressing those problems and stabilizing your medical conditions. That doesn't mean that someone that just joins us doesn't benefit from the program. They absolutely do benefit. But what we have learned is that patients appreciate our services so much that they don't want to change health plans, because if they do, they could lose the services. So what we have seen over time with the prior company I worked for that did similar work, and as well here, is that patients tend to stay with their health plan to keep their services with us.
Very nice. Dr. Sullivan, you told us that you practiced emergency medicine and urgent care for a number of years, and I'm interested in what that experience taught you about people.
It's more what I learned about myself than I think what I learned about other people. So, you know, there was always the phrase, Gomer, get out of my emergency room. That was very popularized on TV shows and other shows. And you get very biased, very jaded, very early. You're tired, you're working long hours, you're raising a family. And it's very easy just to see the task at hand and not see the person behind it. And I think over time, I have really appreciated that no one wants to be a substance use disorder or a person with a substance use disorder or an alcoholic. That's not a life somebody chooses. But sometimes things are out of their control, or they have a family history, or they're in an environment where the options aren't there for them. And you really learn over time that you need to, and I've always, from day one, I didn't care if somebody was a VIP, such as the CEO of the hospital, or someone that was homeless. You treat everyone the same. But I think the way I look at people now is much, much different than I did right now. And last week, one of my former colleagues from the emergency room posted something online about a patient that had alcohol use disorder that was in our emergency room almost every day. Incredibly smart man. On slow nights, you could talk to him. And he was so engaging and so smart, but there all the time. And he recently passed away, and we all felt a true loss because he became a part of our families.
A number of guests on this podcast have noted the public's decreased level of confidence in healthcare in recent years. Do you think this is a real situation? And if so, how should it be addressed?
Yeah, well, if I had the answer for how it should be addressed, I'd either be very rich or working somewhere in Washington right now. And I don't have that answer.
Those aren't mutually exclusive anymore, doctor.
But they are not.
Go right ahead.
But I think, yes, there is definitely some discontent with healthcare. And I can tell you, I recently experienced it myself, going from a full-time position where I had benefits to all of a sudden having to pay for my own health care and being very limited. And it was a substantial number of dollars that went toward my health care every month. But yet, if I wanted to get basic immunizations like the flu shot and COVID vaccine and Pneumovax and those, it was going to cost me $800 out of pocket. So I kept thinking, why do I deserve better health care than someone else? We should all have equal access to healthcare. And I've thought that for a long time. But once you experience it for yourself and you put off your dental appointments a few extra months, or you don't do things that you should do until you get your healthcare back fully, it really is eye-opening. And, you know, I really feel everyone should have equal access not only to healthcare, but to all components of healthcare. We could talk about, you know, what a litigious society we live in, and how I know for years we practiced defensive medicine in the emergency room. And I am so proud of the fact that in 20 years practicing in a trauma center emergency room, I had not one lawsuit against me. But you can do 100% right as a physician and still get sued. I have story after story of my friends doing the right things for people and still being involved in cases. So there's just so many layers on this onion to peel to make it right. But I think ultimately making sure that everybody has access to healthcare and that it's not hard to navigate. And that's so much of what I do today is help patients navigate healthcare, whether it's a neighbor or whether it's at work.
Dr. Sullivan, I was shocked by significant support for an alleged shooter of United Healthcare executive on the streets of New York last year. Have you and your colleagues felt the need to take extra precautions for personal safety, given the current environment?
Yeah, great question. Personally, I have not at all. I still give my cell phone number out to patients when I see them, my personal cell phone number out, because again, we're doing some things to stand up ways that they have access easily. But until that's fully stood up and we have all the bugs worked out, I don't want to see anybody have to jump through any hoops. I think in my position, no, I do not feel that way. But I can definitely relate to being in certain positions where I think others would feel very nervous at times or uncomfortable. So is it a definite concern out there? Absolutely. Absolutely. For me personally, no.
That's good. I'd like to look towards some happier, or at least more hopeful topics. What are some things that make you feel healthcare is moving in the right direction?
Also another great question. So I think having programs like the ones at P3 are awesome in that we can help patients navigate that healthcare system, that we make sure that patients get the right care at the right time, at the right place. I recently had somebody not show up for an appointment with me, in fact, just last week. And when we called this individual, it's very hard for her to get out of her home. She can get around to use the restroom and to get to bed at night using a walker, but even her walker is too wide to fit through the paths that she has within her house. So she has things set up so she can hold on to things along her route. And we said, hey, why don't we come to you and go into your home? So I think having programs where we meet patients where they're at, where we not only help the patient, but we can help the caregivers. And we see more programs that help caregivers are wonderful. There's another company that I consulted with, Nest Health. They assist Medicaid patients. So we go into the home of Medicaid patients. Again, where transportation may be difficult, think of oftentimes it's a mom as a single parent. We've seen dads as single parents, but oftentimes it's a mom with multiple kids at multiple ages. And think about getting all of them on a bus to get one kid to a doctor's appointment. It is very, very difficult. It can cost money. There's bus fare for everyone. It's tough. So we go right to the home. We evaluate those patients in the home. We become the primary care. And it's not just for an individual that qualifies. It's once one individual qualifies, we will take care of anyone that has Medicaid under that roof of that household. So it's a wonderful program. We're also providing the immunizations and everything else for those patients.
Well, that's tremendous. And in one more time on the name of that organization that provides that service?
Yes, that's called Nest Health, and they are presently located in the New Orleans area, as well as Arizona, Central Arizona, and Western Arizona.
Excellent. Dr. Sullivan, do you have advice for physicians early in their career, someone that's just getting going in the field of medicine? What words of advice would you give that person?
Yeah, so that's it's a tough place to be when you're first coming out. There's so much to learn, and medicine is just one piece of what you need to learn. You need to understand the culture of the facility that you work at, what's going to bring you success there. You need to understand workflows and EMRs, and do you have all your passwords set up? Do you have your computer set up properly? What's going to make you most efficient at what you do? So understanding medicine is just a small piece of what you need to know. So you need to give yourself some grace in that you're not going to be perfect right out the door. You're not going to be efficient right out the door. But surround yourself with some great mentors and colleagues and peers. Treat others the way you want to be treated. And really immerse yourself in that culture to get to be as successful as you can. And that means including the nurses, including the environmental staff. Every person is a member of your team. Every person needs to be treated with dignity and respect, and every person has something to add. So I think when you go out there, just make sure that you understand that you can't be very narrow focused and that you need to look at everything around you. And I know that's something that I did not do early in my career, and it took me a long time to learn that.
Great words of advice. As our time together draws to a close, I'm interested in what's next for you as a physician leader.
I'm interested to know that too. I love mentoring others. I love building others. Right now, I have the opportunity to build this program at P3 that I know is going to help so many of our patients toward later stages of life or those that are chronically ill at an earlier age. And the fact that I get to do what brings me joy and happiness, and it's what I've learned over the years, is it's not about the money. I've had some positions where I've made great money, and one of the positions that I took where I was the happiest was about a 40% cut in pay. And it really taught me that happiness is so much more important than your paycheck. Yes, you need a paycheck, and you need to decide what is success to you. And to me right now, success is happiness. There was a time that success was the vacations and the cars and the, you know, having the kids be able to get what they want and pay for their college and all of that. And I think that's so important. And for some people, success truly is about the amount of money that they make. And if that brings you happiness, that's wonderful too. But I'm at a different point in my career now where I can choose what I want to do and not what I have to do. And I love that. So if I can help a company to success, if I can help, and again, patients are always my North Star, if I can help a patient on their healthcare journey and make it easier on their lives and their caregiver lives, then I've done something good and I can sleep well at night.
Well, it sounds like you have the right personal metrics, at least to me.
Well, thank you.
My guest has been Pamela Sullivan. Dr. Sullivan, thank you so much for being on Sound Practice.
And thank you so much for having me.
My thanks to Pamela Sullivan. Dr. Sullivan's new book is Career Prescription Guide, A Physician's Guide for Career Transformation or Advancement. This is a book you will benefit from. My thanks also to the American Association for Physician Leadership for making this podcast possible. Please join me next time on Sound Practice. We release a new episode every other Wednesday.
You've been listening to Sound Practice, the business podcast for physicians and healthcare leaders. Check out the show notes for this episode at soundpractice.com. If you have any suggestions for future episodes, we'd love to hear them. Email us at info@soundpractice.com. Subscribe to Sound Practice wherever you listen to podcasts so you can automatically receive our episodes. And please rate us and comment on the podcast in iTunes and Google Play. Sound Practice is presented and produced by the team at American Association for Physician Leadership. We are the world's premier organization for all aspects of physician leadership in every sector of healthcare. Learn more at physicianleaders.org.
That is holy cow. Batman and Robin.